Thank you for joining us for Life and Taxes with tax attorney Andrew Foster of Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law. Call in now with your tax questions at 800-818-2255 or locally at 247-7282 or 353-4674.
And Andrew Foster is with us. Hi, Andrew.
Good morning, Ben.
What are we talking about today?
All right, Ben. Well, some weeks we have Tax Court Thursday, and some weeks we have Celebrity Corner, we'll call it. We learn from celebrities. Yeah. And then other times we just do tax topics. And today is a Celebrity Corner kind of day.
Okay.
And, you know, I'll probably say the theme of this one is, you know, the best laid plans of mice and men sometimes go awry.
Yes. That's right.
And this happens to do with Alan Thicke.
Oh, yes. Okay. I know a little bit about this. Yeah.
So the former Growing Pains star, you know, TV dad. And he passed away back in December 2016. So just recently, 5 months ago, you know, it was a heart attack. He was playing hockey with his son. It was a pretty prominent story. He was 69 years old. And of course, what happens? He leaves behind an estate, and the players in this particular, estate are his son, Robin, who's a singer. I think people may know him. Brennan, and then Carter, who is playing hockey with his 19-year-old son. And then his third wife, Tanya Kalau, who he married in 2005. So that's who the players are here. And, you know, sometimes, Ben, in these stories where we learn from celebrities, we learn that their estate planning is not quite up to par, and that they didn't have any type of estate planning, such as James Gandolfini. In this particular one, Alan Thicke did have a 1988 living trust.
No kidding.
And it was actually amended the year before he died, so it was amended in 2015, likely because, you know, Carter turned 19.
Right.
So, you know, once someone becomes the age of majority, good idea to go ahead and make some amendments with regards to some trust provisions. But he named Todd Thicke as trustee, who is his brother, and Todd Thicke quickly just said, "I'm out."
Oh, really?
Yeah. He said, "I don't want any part of this. I'm going to go ahead and renounce my right to serve as trustee." And that put Robin and Brennan basically in charge of Alan Thicke's trust.
Okay. Now, was this before, was this a trust that was funded on his death, or is this a...
It wasn't clear, in the court filings and from the other information I could get, but basically if it wasn't, it could have been fully funded, or, you know, he could have left a pour over will, which is basically where any and all assets that he had was going to go into this trust for disposition.
Did Todd say he was out before Alan died, or after?
After. Oh, okay. Yeah. So, you know, what happens a lot of times with a revocable trust, Ben, is that you're the trustee of your revocable trust. And it's the reason for that is because it's revocable. And at any point during your life, you can decide, "Hey, I want out of this trust agreement." And then you is what we call grantor, settlor of the trust, meaning you set it up. And then also you as trustee just sign a document revoking the trust.
Right.
So, usually upon death, we have a successor trustee. In this case, it was Todd Thicke.
And he said no.
And as you can imagine, he's not a beneficiary under this trust in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
He didn't want to get involved with the kids and with the third wife, Tanya. And so therefore, he just steps aside and says, "I'll let you deal with this quote unquote mess."
Right. And now it is beneficiaries now, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So then, you know, basically what we've got here is that, a $3.5 million home, that it appears is a life estate is left to Tanya, meaning that she would be responsible for the upkeep and the maintenance of the home. But as far as the actual ownership of the home goes, she has very limited rights to be able to dispose of the house. And then the remainder obviously goes to the three kids. And then it was a 75-25 split, 75 to the kids, 25 to Tanya with regards to personal property, and then a 60-40 residuary split, 60% to the kids, 40% to Tanya. That's kind of the gist of it, from what.
So what could possibly go wrong?
Well, the problem here, Ben, is that there was a prenuptial agreement, as you very well could imagine. And the prenuptial agreement says, basically that Tanya was to get 25% of the home. But the trust says that she gets a life estate in the home. And then, you know, it says.
Hence the mess.
And then we've also got, you know, during the, when they did the prenuptial agreement in 2004, before they were married in 2005, you know, Alan Thicke listed $14 million of assets. And, ironically, Tanya Kalau listed $40,000 in assets. And oh, by the way, that consisted of one engagement ring.
Her only asset was the engagement ring she, he gave her.
Was an engagement ring that he gave her. So you can kind of see the writing on the wall, even from the prenuptial agreement, which is basically, that, you know, Alan comes into this third marriage, with significant assets. Third spouse, Tanya, comes in here with virtually no assets.
Well, with no assets.
With no assets. Really? Yeah. And basically, both signed the prenuptial agreement. It appears to be valid upon its face, but here we go. We've got a conflict with what the prenuptial agreement says and then what the actual estate plan document says. And that's why it's so important to have these documents act in concert with one another. Because here we go now where Robin and Brennan have now had to file what I would call a declaratory judgment action here in North Carolina. They asked for direction from the court, which is basically exactly what a declaratory judgment action is, which is, okay, court, here we are. We're the trustees of this trust. We believe that the trust speaks for itself. We believe that this trust tells us exactly what to do with this property. And we think that we are, you know, we think we understand this document, but we need guidance from the court as to how to interpret the language of this. And then, of course, you know, Miss Tanya's got her lawyer out there saying, whoa, 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 wait a second here. Not only is this house, 25% house issue, an issue, but also what is really the community property side of things, which we call marital property in North Carolina. And, you know, because that would be governed under the terms of the premarital agreement. It's possible that Tanya would have more rights in certain property if they're labeled as community property, marital property in North Carolina. Or is it separate property, which could be governed under the terms of the trust document? So, you know, he's wanting some clarification as to what exactly falls under these categories.
Couldn't both things be true? She'd have 25% interest and have a life estate or not?
Not, no, because if you have 25%, then you have actual ownership. So one of the things he's arguing, Tanya's lawyer's arguing is that, look, she gets a 25% interest in this house. She's then a tenants in common owner with the children who own this other 75% of the house.
Okay, tenants in common. That was my next question.
You know, and she's responsible for the payments of 25% of the payments, and then they're responsible for 75% of the payments for the upkeep, taxes, maintenance, et cetera, et cetera. Also, if the property were to sell, Ben, you know,
she gets a quarter.
She gets a quarter of the property. So, you know, there's $3.5 million house sitting out there that, you know, if it's sold as a life tenant, if it sells, you know, there's an actuarial table and tells you exactly how much you get, but it wouldn't be nearly 25%, based upon the ages. So she's looking at, you know, she's looking at trying to enhance her stake in this. And we can see why, because, you know, when you enter a marriage with virtually no assets and now your husband, who is, you know, the breadwinner, is now gone, and you don't feel like necessarily you're getting your fair shake, I assume, from the trust. Although it seems, on its face, the trust seems fairly fair as far as the terms go. I mean, a 60-40 split, a 75-25 split. If those numbers are correct, then that seems fairly reasonable. But of course, here we go. You know, because of this prenuptial agreement that just isn't quite in concert with the trust document, we now have a fight on our hands that can get pretty nasty. Because I think that there's enough leeway there for her to make a pretty strong argument that she should get 25% of the house at least.
This is still being litigated, isn't it?
Yeah. So they just filed this action in court. And this is how it comes out, Ben, because, you know, all this stuff, the idea behind a trust is to keep things private, you know, within the family. You know, here I am telling you details of what Alan Thicke's trusts say. And here I am telling you details about what Alan Thicke's premarital agreements say. You know, and that was not the design of this plan. The design was is for all this to be, you know, he would pass away and we'd never hear about any disposition of
which
his
came
estate.
First, the trust or the premarital?
So the trust was from 1988 and the premarital agreement was in 2004. So really, and I mentioned the trust was amended, which is easy. A revocable trust is are pretty freely amended, was amended back in 2015. So
which it had an opportunity then to be in concert.
Exactly it. Right. Had an opportunity to fix the problem, which is basically give her 25% of the house under the terms of the trust. If that's the case, then, you know, what does she really have to argue? I mean, the trust is pretty self-explanatory. It's pretty much in concert. I mean, she gets into a oh, this is really community property versus separate property, which is governed by the terms of the trust, I really think it takes the weight out of her argument. But because of this, you know, inconsistency mm-hmm. between the planning documents, we have a problem on our hands. I mean, to the point where I'll read you what Robin and Brendan's lawyer said. You know, they want to honor the memory of their father. This is in the action they filed before the court. And that and prevent his testamentary intentions from being undermined by avarice and overreaching of his third wife, Tanya Kalau. Mm. So you can see by that language, Ben, we're setting up for
World War III. Thanksgiving dinner together.
They're not going to be around the table for sure. No. And, you know, it's really sad because, as I said, and that's why I kind of started this with the best laid plans of mice and men sometimes mm-hmm. go awry, because I'm sure Alan Thicke thought he had all of his affairs in order. He had a trust. He had a premarital agreement. He had, I mean, all these documents that we lawyers mm-hmm. want our clients to have. But the big problem here is that they just weren't quite mm-hmm. in concert, and the plan wasn't complete. And that leaves a little bit of avenue there for a challenge.
Another reason why when life changes, when you go through the various stages in life, you need to go and reexamine those documents.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. One thing that bothers me there is that he should have had a little better idea from Brother Todd whether or not he was going to stay around.
Well, you know, that's common, Ben, that you want to put that kind of third party mm-hmm. in there who doesn't necessarily have a vested interest in the fight. So, you know, you have Todd back there who's just the quote-unquote independent trustee.
Yeah.
He's not Tanya. He's not Robin or Brennan or Carter. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the issue is that sometimes that independent person says, I don't want to get involved in this. Yeah, you guys figure it out.
You can email Andrew afoster@harvellandcollins.com. Also, go to that website to find out more information about Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law. Make that appointment at 726-9050. Life and Taxes brought to you by Harvell and Collins.